All of us experience a sense of loneliness in our lives. When we're single, many of us believe that if we only got married, then we wouldn't be lonely anymore. For those of us who are married and experience a sense of deep loneliness, also experience hopelessness.
This is Christianity at Work, a radio ministry of McKenzie Study Center. On today's program, Dr. Jack Crabtree and marriage and family therapist Christine Barber continue to explore issues of singleness. Being single can present various problems. One of the most common is loneliness. For many single people, loneliness is a deeply felt and abiding burden. Often marriage is looked to as a solution to being lonely. But does marriage truly solve the problem of loneliness? And what if God does not provide a marriage partner? Here now are Jack and Christine.
This program is fourth in a series on singleness, and I'd really encourage you to look at our other tapes. We've done three others, and get a whole context for what we're talking about today. But today what we'd like to talk about is the challenges of singleness. Certainly there's a lot of challenges that singles have that married people do not have. One of those is loneliness. Seems like that's one of the biggest challenges that we have.
Yeah, I think probably one of the first things we could say about that is that it's actually a perceived challenge of singleness. In fact, it's not unique to singleness, I think. The fact of the matter is that within the context of marriage, loneliness can be just as big and as huge a problem as it is in the context of singleness. But from the perspective of a single person, it's very understandable that they might think, I'm lonely, I don't have my partner. All those married people have their partner. They don't have this problem with loneliness that I have.
That's a really good point. In fact, I've had married people tell me that they used to think loneliness was a huge problem when they were single, and yet now that they're married and they're lonely, it's a far bigger problem to them because they have the hope or the expectation of losing that loneliness through their marriage. And in fact, they have maintained it, and it's even gotten stronger and more disappointing and more frightening to them.
So to be lonely as a single person is to be lonely with the hope of not being. To be lonely as a married person is a kind of hopeless loneliness.
Well said. Yeah. Exactly right.
Yeah. Why is that? Why does marriage not solve the problem of loneliness?
Perhaps the biggest reason that's true, Jack, is because most of us have a real hollow spot inside of us. It's hollow for any number of reasons, but perhaps that's just how God made us, is to have this need for connection that's never really satisfied. And that's really, I think, what life is about a lot, is to recognize that a lot of what we need, a lot of what our heart yearns for, we don't have. And ultimately, hopefully, that will make us yearn for the kingdom of God in an even greater way. But we go into marriage thinking that hollowness is going to be filled up. But it can't be filled up necessarily by another person. Lots of times the loneliness has not only come to us as just an existential reality, but as a reality of having been lonely and alone throughout our growing up years. Parents perhaps who were very well-meaning, but perhaps got, because of whatever circumstances, had to be at work a great deal of the time and unable to respond to the needs that we have as children. Perhaps parents who themselves have not have any understanding of what connectedness looks like or what children need or indeed what they need it and unable to offer it. They come from kind of a flatness of relationship and offer the flatness without cruel intent to their children. And that, of course, builds onto the loneliness that we come into life with.
And sometimes that may never be solved and resolved in our life?
Right. It may never be resolved. Marriage can help it. That really is true. I know that in my own life, my marriage has gone a long way in helping me fill up a hole that is there. But when I'm honest with myself, there is a hole that's still there. And that if I work at making my husband fill that hole, to the extent that I do that, I'm hurting my marriage and I'm pulling him into a position that isn't his.
Yeah, it seems to me that one of the differences that exists between people is the way they experience life. some people seem to have a ongoing, continuing problem with that, what you call that emptiness, that sense of hollowness that we sometimes live with. And others of us don't really experience that all that acutely. It doesn't really mean that those who don't have that problem or that sense of emptiness and hollowness, it doesn't mean that they're necessarily any better off, but it's just not the way they experience their life. That the point being, the experience of my life is just something I have to come to terms with between me and God. How am I going to confront the reality of how my life experience goes down? If I constantly have that sense of emptiness, then I constantly have that sense of emptiness. And I have to, and it will raise for me the questions of the meaning of my existence, the purpose of my existence. Who is God? What is God? What is God offering me? And all those
good?
Very huge questions that we have to answer.
Is God good that he doesn't fill in my loneliness?
Is God good? Exactly. Yeah. It's just too glib for us as Christians to come along and say, come to Jesus and he'll fill up your emptiness. I mean, it just is not the case, necessarily. The reason we come to Jesus is not because he's going to fill up my emptiness. We come to Jesus because he's going to save me from the ultimate futility and death of this world to an everlasting life of life in the kingdom of God. And there are no guarantees for what that's going to look like in terms of how my experience will go in this life here and now. So not only does Jesus not fill up the emptiness, but marriage does not necessarily fill up the emptiness. If I don't have a particular problem with it, then I could not particularly have a problem with it as a single person, or I could get married and find my marriage, be quite content in my marriage. But if there's a kind of sense of contentment just in terms of who I am as a person, then that's just the experience that God has given me. I don't think either marriage or Jesus really has much to do with how that experience looks. It's a question of what God has dealt me in life, I think.
So, Jack, what you're saying is that we shouldn't look to Jesus or look to our mate to make us not lonely. That there's going to be a lot of loneliness in our life, regardless if we're a Christian or if we're married. Some of us may experience it in a very big depth. Other of us may not experience it very much at all.
And I think that's a good way of putting it. It's not the reality of the loneliness that differs. It's how acutely do we feel it? How acutely do we experience it? I think that varies from person to person.
Over the years, a lot of people have come through Mackenzie Study Center. Some have come to study biblical interpretation. Some come to focus on applying the truth of the Bible to the world we live in. And others come for the great Bible teaching. And still others come because they need a place to think about their faith. What is Mackenzie? It's a group of people who take the Bible seriously, who see the goal of this life as the pursuit of righteousness and wisdom, who see the gospel as the most profound message in all of human history. The Mackenzie staff members have dedicated their lives to the pursuit of knowing the truth contained in the Bible. They see the need to get back to the Bible as more important than ever in this darkening world. Getting back to the Bible means trying to understand what the biblical authors intended to say when they wrote the Bible. And this can be hard work. The scriptures are often difficult to interpret and understand. Sometimes the Bible doesn't always say what we want it to say. But if we are to come to understand this world and our place in it from God's perspective, then the hard work of biblical interpretation is worth it. This is the passion motivating the staff and families of Mackenzie Study Center. If you are interested in knowing more about Mackenzie, we'll give you information on how to contact us at the end of the program. Then when you do, you might ask for some of our News and Views articles, such as Forgiveness, The Parable of the Unforgiving Servant by Ron Julian. In this article, Ron takes a close look at Christ's statement that if we don't forgive, we will not be forgiven. Ron's conclusion is that Christ meant exactly what he said. God's people know that they are sinners, and only the mercy of God stands between them and their deserved destruction. It is this humility, without which no one can come to the cross of Christ, which results in forgiving others. Ron argues that Jesus makes this point most forcefully in the parable of the unforgiving servant. Or you might want to read Jack Crabtree's Believing Without Seeing, First Reflections on Thomas. In this article, Jack argues that doubting Thomas has received a bum rap. Thomas merely demanded the same evidence of God's resurrection that the other disciples had received. Jack states, in the unfolding of the historical events, Thomas and no one else explicitly articulates what evidence he requires in order to believe. Jack goes on to say that this story highlights the extraordinary hurdle that exists for most people, for people like you and me, to come to believe in the resurrection of Jesus. Then he personally concludes, I believe in the resurrection of Jesus, most importantly, because it makes so much sense in the light of everything I have come to understand and know about myself, about God, and about life in general. Again, at the end of the program, we'll give you information on how you can find out more about McKenzie Study Center.
Each of us, Jack, needs to deal with the issue of loneliness in our lives, whether we're married or whether we're single. Some of us experience it very acutely. Other of us don't experience it much at all. Why do you think there's such a big difference between us?
Well, I'm really not sure, Christine, but that two things strike me is that would have a big impact on how we experience our loneliness. One would be our level of maturity. I think that would make a big difference. The more mature we are, the more we learn to be contented in whatever circumstances we're in. We learn that asking myself the question, am I happy, is not really a particularly relevant question. Wisdom teaches us that. So I do think maturity makes a big difference, but probably equally important is just that God has created us as individuals who are very, very, very different people. And we look at life differently, we perceive it differently, we experience it differently. And it just seems like some people are constitutionally cheerier people. More optimistic, more positive, kind of happier people than other people are, just by God-given created temperament. And that doesn't make them more mature, and it doesn't make their life any more full and more meaningful. It just changes the complexion of how they experience life. And I think we make a huge mistake to say happy people are ultimately better off than gloomier, more pessimistic people. That's not necessarily the case. They're happier, that's true, but it doesn't necessarily buy them greater wisdom, greater understanding, greater maturity. In terms of what's ultimately important, they're not necessarily better off. It's not unlike some people in this world are wealthier materially than other people, but just because they are wealthier doesn't necessarily mean they are better off. James, in his letter, talks about the brother of humble circumstances, that is, the poor person, should exult in his high position because he's a believer, whereas the rich man, the one of high position materially, who is an unbeliever, should weep over his low position. Just because we are better off for one reason or another, whether it's materially or temperamentally, just because we might be better off in this world, doesn't mean we're better off ultimately, and we have to keep that in perspective.
Well, here's the pessimistic counsel coming in here, and Jack, I'll really agree with you in both those ways. As we become more mature, perhaps our loneliness diminishes because we understand the meaning of who God is in a way that really cuts very deep into the core of who we are. We talked about that some last week, and I think it was a really important discussion to understand that early on. We really don't understand in our hearts the words that God has meaning in our life. In our hearts, we understand that as we grow and grow in our lives. I understand it at 43, much better than I did at 23, and I'm certain that if I live to 83, I'll understand it far more than I do today, and for that I'm really grateful to see definitely the progression that God has in our lives of helping us understand and see life better and better. And as we see life better and better, we can put things into perspective and into focus. For example, my daughter a few days ago asked me, you know, are you afraid of dying, Mom? And had she asked me that at 23, I think I would have really said yes, and it would have even frightened me to think about it. Certainly there's a fear that I have of dying still. I think I have more the fear of the process of dying than the death itself, however. I see life differently. It just isn't as awesome a thing for me. I hope when death comes to me that it will prove out that way. But even to think about it, to talk about it, isn't nearly as difficult as it was years ago, because I understand better than I did. And so there's definitely this progression that makes facing anything in our lives not quite as difficult, or at least it's different than it was.
Yeah.
I guess where maybe I'd like to look further, explore further, Jack, is it just temperamental differences that make us not concerned about loneliness? I wonder, Jack, if the people who don't feel lonely, who don't at least at some points in their life have to face into that, are people who aren't really looking at the reality of what's going on. It seems to me that one of the basic components of our humanness is that we're in a lonely state. Isn't that perhaps the biggest avenue through which God uses, the suffering avenue that God uses to bring us to an understanding and need of Him? Have I cloaked my soul, cloaked my heart away from what I need to see if I don't experience any loneliness at all?
Well, that's a good question, and it's hard to answer, because I do think that there is a way of escaping the problem of my loneliness by denial, you know, by having the problem but trying to hide from it and cloak it and bury it and just not face it and not deal with it. I just have to say, from my own experience, I don't seem to experience loneliness at this point in my life with the same sense of acuteness that say my wife does at times. Now, why is that? My best answer to that is, I think it's temperamental. I think it's just sort of built into the way that she looks at and experiences life, as opposed to the way that I look at and experience life. It doesn't mean the problem is not real for me. I just don't experience it in quite the same dramatic, acute form. It doesn't produce the same depth of unhappiness over the problem that it does, I think, for other people. Now, it could be that I'm in denial. You know, it could be that if I were to face it more squarely, I would be a lot more unhappy because of the problem. That's a very real possibility, but if so, I'm deceived enough to not know that that's the case. It doesn't seem to be a problem to me if God so created the world that our emotional map is different, and therefore our emotional experience as we face the various realities of our life, we have somewhat different emotional reactions to them. A different level of intensity, different dramatic, one experiences it more acutely and more dramatically than another, and so on. I don't think that's a problem. There's lots of individual differences that God has built into His creation. That may be one of them.
I certainly agree with you, Jack, that there's a lot of individual differences, and certainly we do experience loneliness differently based on those individual differences. Though I'm thinking about your background, and of course as a counselor I do that a lot,
yeah,
but
yeah,
your background is probably very different than perhaps your wife's background.
Yes.
You have a very unique background. You were in a family where a husband and wife, your mother and dad, loved each other and demonstrated that to you guys, and that you had brothers that wanted to be with and care about each other. You weren't islands all unto yourself, as I understand your family at least, and I could be wrong, but I think that's how I hear you.
Yeah, and that's true. And I'm not, by making my temperament, I'm not really distinguishing between what's genetic and what's the result of nurturing, and that's really true. And I think we would be different people if we were nurtured differently and if we had different early experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay. Well, let's not get too far off on this subject. It's an interesting one to us, but I think we need to move on. So Jack, if a person is very lonely, a single person is very lonely and experiences that acutely in their lives, what then do they do about it?
Well, it seems like there's two things. One is pursue relationships, pursue relationships with friends, brothers and sisters in the Lord that I can build connections with and build some level of friendship commitment with that are meaningful relationships. Someone I can talk to, someone I can share my burdens with, someone that I can bounce my ideas off of and just connect in all the ways that people connect with each other. That's going to mute that loneliness because it's going to go a large distance toward providing the kind of partnership that marriage provides. It can't ever replace marriage, because marriage is really a unique kind of intimacy and a unique kind of partnership. On the one hand, in some respects, friendships can be more meaningful than marriages. And what I mean by that is a friendship, for example, with a member of the same sex, there can be a real natural kind of rapport there between two people that doesn't come naturally with my marriage partner. The one I'm married to, I may need to work at understanding them and knowing what makes them tick and so on. We've talked about that in the past. Whereas friendship may just really click and really go smoothly, at least for a time in my life it may. And in that sense may be more, seem like an easier relationship. So my point being, friendship can never replace marriage, but it can go a whole long way toward meeting some of the same needs, certainly the same needs for connectedness. But equally as important, I think, is just coming to terms with the reality of the suffering of loneliness in the way that we've described in past programs. I just need to allow myself to suffer the deprivation of not being happy in the way I would like to be happy, or not feel content or not feel full in the way that I would like to feel content or full, and just face into that in a way that's going to confront me with the important issues of my relationship with God and resolve them there. Decide it's okay if God is not meeting all of my needs in the way that I would like them met. He's in charge. He's sanctifying me. He's the one who's making me wise and teaching me to love Him and teaching me to know Him. And that's really what my life and existence is all about. And really confront it at that level.
And I can't confront it at that level. I don't really ask the important questions of God unless I really have a need to, unless it's, my life actually is painful enough that right. I ask the questions.
Exactly.
And so one of the big things that singleness can bring me is into an understanding of God that maybe my marriage can help camouflage a lot longer. In marriage, I can pretend as though I'm fine, that at least my marriage maybe will get better tomorrow, or that things are just fine in my marriage today, and I don't have to confront the very large reality of my own loneliness and what that means to me in my life and in my relationship with God.
Yeah, exactly. You know, what I mentioned earlier, that what James says in his letter, let the brother of humble circumstances exult in his high position. And then the irony is the rich person is to wail in his low position. I think you could, that same principle is true throughout life. If we are rich in the things of this world, on the one hand, it's a gift and a blessing, but it's also treacherous. And we have to understand that it's treacherous. Because if I'm rich in the things of this world, whether it's a marriage or possessions or fame and honor and power in this world, whatever it is, if I've got something that strikes me as valuable out of this world, as much as it might be a delight to me and a pleasure to me and a joy to me on the one hand, on the other hand, I risk it masking the real need of my life and putting off my confronting the issue of what is my life all about in the way that you just described. Deprivation and suffering is always a safer place to be in that regard. It's less treacherous. It's not as much fun, but it's a lot less dangerous and a lot less treacherous.
It's more treacherous in the sense I might really miss what I need to learn in life.
Right.
What I have to learn in life. What I'm made to learn in life. I may just get what I feel good about, and my eternal well-being is severely at stake.
Yeah, I think there are a whole lot of people that go through life almost happy. And that's the worst place you can be, is almost happy. Because it allows you to live with the illusion, my life is right, everything is well, all is okay, It's just that I need to fix a couple of little things here and adjust them, and then everything will just be fine. Well, the reality is that everything is not fine at all. Everything is terrible, and we need to be saved out of this existence into an existence that is really what we were made for. But I won't see that if I can spend my whole days thinking I'm almost there, I'm almost happy. And that's a very dangerous place to be.
I was talking to a teenager the other day, Jack, about this very idea. He was feeling really down, real depressed. And he said, you know, I said, what's up? What's the problem here? And he said, well, I just didn't get what I wanted for Christmas. I thought I wanted this basketball, but I don't really think I wanted the basketball at all. I think I wanted something else, but I don't know what that is. And then he started thinking about his life. Well, you know, I really don't like living in Oregon. There's too much rain in Oregon. I think I'd really rather live in Mexico. I think that's what I would like. That's the problem. Well, you know what? It's not that I don't want a basketball. I'd really like a basketball, but I'd much rather have a CD player. I think that's the problem. You know, I wish that we hadn't moved. Moving is really a hard thing. I don't get to be around my friends very much anymore because we're too far away from them. You know, I think that's the problem. And I think really the problem was that this teenager, like most of us, don't know that life isn't supposed to be perfect. We think that we should just work toward just being happier. If we could just figure out what we wanted, like go to Mexico in the sun or not have moved or get the CD player instead of the basketball, if we just kind of work toward that happiness, if we just made the better decision and not done things that we want, then that it would be okay. And that is such an illusion.
Yes.
And it was frustrating to me to listen to this teenager talk and not be able to explain to him, not have him have a context to understand that that's not what it's all about, that he's unhappy because there's a lot of, I mean, why is he unhappy, Jack?
Well, yeah, the bottom line is ultimately the existence that we experience here and now is ultimately futile. And that sometimes we are more in touch with the futility of it than others, and we respond to it emotionally.
And what we try and do is fix it.
We want to fix it, exactly.
And I think in his adolescent way, he was trying to fix it by having a different Christmas present. But I think what he was really doing was experiencing this aloneness, this dissatisfaction with life, this stuff in me that doesn't feel quite right, and I want to somehow fix it. And, you know, when I experience that with my children or with my husband, you know, I want to fix it too.
Yeah.
I want to help make it all better. And if I was that child's parent, I would want to run out and get a CD player. It would be such an urge in me to make it better.
Yeah.
And that's certainly what we all do. And that's what single people do. If I'm feeling unsatisfied, then what I need to do is I need to just go get married because that's what's going to solve my problem. And it's not going to solve their problem any more than the CD player is going to solve that teenager's problem.
Exactly.
Well, let's break for a few moments. Jack and Christine will return in a minute. Christine Barber is a licensed marriage and family therapist. More than that, she is a woman committed to knowing and applying the truth of God's Word to everyday life. She has spent years working alongside others as they discover the truth of who they are and then try to pursue life with love and wisdom. Dr. Jack Crabtree is a philosopher by training, a Bible teacher, pastor, and professor by profession. If you spend a short time with Jack, you quickly learn he is a seeker of truth and a man with a deeply passionate love for God's Word. For years, he has studied and taught the Bible at churches in California and Oregon, as well as the McKenzie Study Center in Eugene. Both Jack and Christine are convinced the Bible is the true Word of God.
Before the break, we were saying that one of the biggest challenges of singleness is loneliness. And during the break, Jack and I were saying that, gosh, it would be great if there was a single person here because they could help us out. They could talk to us about their experience of loneliness and what it's like for them, the challenges of it, the disadvantages of being single, and the difficulty of facing into the loneliness themselves. I really would like to encourage people to write and talk to us about this. It would be helpful in terms of our understanding, and perhaps in future programs we could talk more about the subject of loneliness in relationship to single people in particular.
Yeah.
So we're leaving that subject, not because we're done. Hopefully we'll be able to make an addendum at a future point in time. But what, Jack, are some other challenges for singles?
I think another one is self-image. I think a person who is single, particularly if they want to be married and they have pursued marriage and relationships, but it just has not happened and it hasn't worked out, the question that is raised in their thinking is, what's wrong with me? Why am I not marriage material? Why does no one want to marry me? Why am I undesirable? Why am I not interesting to anybody? We may have talked about this a little bit already, but I think it's worth going over again, that we really have to understand how mysterious the process of God bringing two people together in marriage really is. When any person chooses to marry another person, it's not because that person was the all-around best person in the world, in their judgment. It's rather because it was the person they wanted to commit their life to. And it really is mysterious. It really is inexplicable. I, as a single man, could be looking at two women. One of them, clearly more mature, clearly further along the line in their relationship with their, in their walk with the Lord, more talented, maybe have all kinds of virtues over the other person. But it's not the more mature and the more talented one that I'm interested in committing my life to. It's the other one. Why? Well, I don't know. I mean, I can't explain that. But when I make a decision to marry, I'm making a decision based on my desire to make a commitment to someone. I'm not voting for the most, for the best person in the world. It's not my, that's not what I'm saying when I marry someone. Therefore, because that's the case, if I am single and no one has wanted to marry me, has no one has chosen to make that commitment to me, it's not because everyone in the world has voted me the absolutely worst person in the world, the last person that they would ever want to marry because I'm the worst person. I'm the dregs of society. That's not what that means. And we really have to get perspective on that and really need to understand that the reason I'm not married is because God has so written the script of my life that I'm not married at this point in time. That's why I'm not married. And it has absolutely nothing to do with my relative worth.
Point really well made. We certainly do. I chose my husband for reasons that kind of confounded me. I didn't want to marry someone, actually, that was like him. The first time I said this, I remember people throwing tomatoes at me almost. My husband was standing right there, and some woman came up to him. It was a workshop we were doing together and said, "I am so sorry your wife doesn't like you. I'm so sorry that she said such mean things about you." And my husband said, "Well, no, it really wasn't mean things. She's just saying what I already know and what we've discussed and just the reality of our lives." But he's a redhead, and I don't think I would have chosen a redhead, and I'm 5'4", and he's 6'4", so he's too tall, I'm not too short. And you know, I wanted a businessman, and he became a pastor and then a counselor. There were all sorts of reasons that made sense to me that, I just wouldn't marry this person. But nonetheless, I was drawn to him. I just knew it. And I had to really go kicking and screaming into my marriage in many ways. On one hand, I just knew that it was a good thing, that I was heading in the right direction. Ultimately, I knew it was a good thing. I enjoyed him. We enjoyed each other. He was great to me. He cherished me. There were things that I was certainly drawn to. But in other ways, there were things that I was not drawn to at all. And in that respect, I went kicking and screaming into my marriage. So really, it was kind of a mystery to me. I can explain it better at this point in my life, but I certainly couldn't then. You know, though, Jack, this is another point. But a lot of people also get married not just for mysterious reasons that are good, but I can think of being in relationships prior to my relationship with my husband and wanting to be married to those people, not because there was anything at all mysterious or good about it, but because I was afraid of being alone. And so I was just picking the first person in front of my face. And I actually got rejected in those relationships. You know, that person or people did not want to marry me. Thank goodness at this point. Literally, thank God at this point. But I would have married them just because I didn't know what to do with my life. And it wasn't because I was, again, choosing who was the best in the universe for me, but that person was in front of me, and I was just going to go for it.
Yeah, it seems to me that there's two criteria for making a decision to marry someone, and they're both important components to it. One is, do I want to commit my life to them? The other one is it a wise and responsible decision to commit my life to that person? And what I mean by that is, are they committed to the very idea of marriage? I want to get into a marriage with them. Do they have a clue at all what marriage is and what they are making a commitment to? And is that something that they are interested in doing? And are they committed to learning, to growing, to developing a relationship with God and getting to know God better, and so on? To violate either of those, that is to say, to make a choice for someone who either is not interested in marriage or is not interested in God, I think would be foolish. And I don't care whether it's the last person on earth who's likely to want to marry me, it just seems to me that I'm making a huge mistake to marry that person just to be married. But as long as it is someone who's interested and committed to the idea of marriage and is wanting to be married to me and commit their life to me, and they want to get to know God, then it's not an unwise decision. And at that point, to decide to marry them because there's no one else that I know who'd be interested in marrying me who fits those criteria, then I think that's fine. That's a responsible decision. And that's where we just have to trust that God is leading and God is bringing us together. My point being, to follow up on what you're saying, it is a huge mistake to just get married just for the sake of getting married. I think that's wrong.
I'm thinking of a man that I work with in my counseling who is single and who very much experiences the acuteness of their loneliness and has all sorts of married couples around him that he spends time with and would really like to have a life like them. He would like to have children. He would just like a companion. He would like some very good things about marriage. But there's nobody around except for one woman that's very interested in him. But the woman is not, who professes to have an interest in God, but who indeed is just a very closed person who is in their walk in their life, by the way they are critical and hurtful toward other people, are showing a disregard for what's right and what's good, although their words say differently. They go to church, they read their Bible, but their actions in their life don't look like they're headed toward what's good at all. However, this woman is interested in him. And I really see his courage in being willing to be a friend to this person, even though this person really wants to be married to him, but deciding over and over again that even though he's lonely, it would be better to not be married to someone who truly in their heart doesn't look like they're committed to what's right and what's good. Yeah. It's a very huge decision that this person makes all the time, because he could at least on the outside look like a married person like other people he's around. He could feel less alone even in society, because in the Christian society that he's a part of, in his church, particularly, most of the couples are married. Most of the people are married. And so he feels very much like an outsider and would just like to kind of fit in. And I believe that's probably true in many Christian circles, is being married is the more common position, more common to be married than to be single. And so there's a huge press, I think, for single people to go ahead and get married. And we need to be wise about it. So we said that two of the largest challenges of singleness are loneliness and our self-concept. Are there more?
Well, of course, especially in our culture, in our society, there's the problem of sexual temptation if we're single. And I'd prefer to save that until we'll have a whole series on sexuality later. And I'd prefer to wait until then to address that problem and that challenge. But that's obviously a huge one.
Yeah, it's a huge one. And let's underline that we, again, keep promising that we'll talk about sexuality, but we really, truly will. And this is a really important part of it. It's how to deal with our sexual urges as a single person. So the biggest challenges of singleness are loneliness, how to deal with it, what is it look like in our life, do other people deal with it. Another challenge of singleness is our own self-image. The third challenge of singleness is our sexuality and how to deal with our sexual urges. We said we'd talk about that at a later time. But let's move on now and talk about how should a person deal with their desire to be married.
Well, a number of things come to mind. I think it's important, first of all, that we don't take the attitude that my life is on hold, waiting for this desire to be fulfilled, and then I will begin my life. I think it's important to not take that attitude. It seems to me all too prevalent that people do that, that they're just kind of biding their time, waiting for life to begin.
They might not be waiting in terms of not being involved in things. They may indeed be working in the high school group or being in a singing group or somehow ministering to people in some way. So it isn't exactly what it looks like on the outside of their life, but more of an internal waiting.
Yeah, it's more a state of mind, I think, than it is a question of practical decisions that they make, yeah.
Because indeed they might be very active.
Yeah. But on the other hand, they're active in a way that they don't want to sink roots down too deeply because they want to be available or something like that. And the fear of making commitments and making plans and throwing yourself into some kind of project, I don't think there's no need for that. God is quite capable of steering my life regardless of how deep my roots go. And if he wants me married, he's going to get me married, and it's all going to work out if God has that in store for me. So I can go ahead and get on with my life, even to the point of making long-term commitments to things. And one way or the other, God will sort all that stuff out. But I don't need to just wait to get started. Secondly, it seems to me that it's important that I pursue relationships with other people for the sake of those relationships, not for the sake of getting married one day. That is, I must not see every relationship in terms of, is this going to get me toward marriage or isn't it going to get me toward marriage? I just have relationships with people. And if friendships develop. And if, at whatever level wherever the relationship takes me, that's where it takes me, but that's okay. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to be about building relationships with people. Serving people, loving people, caring for people, teaching people, helping them grow as I would hope that they would help me grow. Out of that will come that relationship that will end up in marriage if it's going to happen at all for me. But I don't need to always be... I mean, the question is always there, and that's not a problem. Is this the person that I will marry one day? The fact that the question is there is not a problem. But I dare not allow that question to dictate how I'm going to relate to the person. I just be their friend. I be their brother. I be their sister. And let it go from there. I think it's vital that I just... One way of getting on with my life is that I, as I said, seek to serve people. God has gifted me in a particular way. He's given me a unique role to play in this life. I just need to get on with it. I need to serve the Lord by serving the truth in whatever way is appropriate for me. It just seems to me that it would be all too easy to waste my life by being so preoccupied and obsessed with solving the problem of my not being married yet that I let all these days and months and years go by without doing what God has called me to do, without throwing myself into whether it's teaching or serving other people and their material and physical needs or whatever, doing what God has given me to do in relationship to other people. I have a golden opportunity now that I'm not married to use my freedom and my availability to serve all the more energetically. Now is the time to do that. And then probably the most important thing of all is that I not take this desire that I have to be married and try to use it, manage that desire in such a way that I manipulate God. There's two things that we tend to do. We either feed the desire and not allow it to evaporate, not allow it to go away, not allow it to diminish, because we have this fear that God will look down from heaven and he will see me not wanting to be married quite as intensely as I used to want to, and he'll decide, I think quite wrongly, that, oh, I guess it doesn't matter to him or her whether they get married. I guess this marriage partner I had in store for her, I'll give him to somebody else. And so we kind of feel, strategically, we feel compelled to feed that desire, make sure it stays intense so that God knows good and well that I'm interested. That's a mistake. God is not fooled one way or the other, and he's going to do what he's going to do. I can just allow the desire to ebb and flow in intensity and just run its course. And then the other strategy we adopt is that we get it in our head that if I can just get over my desire to be married, then God will give me a husband or wife. That the reason he hasn't given me a husband or wife now is because I want it too much. And he's waiting for me to finally not want it, to not make it an idol, to not be obsessed with it. And once I get over it, then he'll give me the husband or wife that I want. That's a mistake as well. God doesn't mind that I want it. He made me to desire it. He made me to want it. He's going to give me a husband or wife when he wants to give me a husband or wife. It has nothing to do with the state of my desires. So we just need to realize that I can't manipulate God here. It's silly to try, and it's foolish. The mentality out of which I do it is foolishness anyway.
Don't go away. Jack and Christine will continue the discussion in just a moment. You've heard it said that a college degree is not what it used to be. It seems these days colleges and universities are charging more and offering less. That's one of the reasons why Gutenberg College was developed. While many universities brag about their massive size and huge student body, Gutenberg College thrives on the idea that big is not always better. A student should not become a meaningless cog in some big education machine. A student should have the chance to interact in a meaningful way with his or her peers and professors. At Gutenberg, classes are small. Interaction with other students and with faculty is high. And education becomes interesting as well as rewarding. Imagine having a deep discussion about Aristotle or Shakespeare, where your ideas are sincerely considered. Imagine struggling to understand the writings of Augustine and having a faculty tutor come alongside you to help. And you'll get a good idea of why Gutenberg exists. And yet, there are many other advantages to Gutenberg other than its size. If you want to know more about Gutenberg College and all that it offers, call 541-485-4801. That's area code 541-485-4801. Now, if you didn't have time to write that down, stay tuned. We'll repeat it again at the end of the program. Here again are Jack and Christine.
As a counselor, I see, Jack, that most people deal very, very much with the issue of loneliness in their lives, both married people and single people. It's just a condition for us. When we get to the bottom of things, people are afraid of rejection. Why? Because it will leave them alone. They're afraid of their own inadequacy. Why? Because they're afraid people will reject them, and then they'll be alone. I could take many, many routes from people's issues down to loneliness, but very, very often it comes down to that. It's a profoundly difficult issue that we all deal with in our lives, married people and single people. It's important for, I think, single people to understand that marriage isn't a way to solve the issues of loneliness, that, in fact, marriage can make us feel more acutely lonely because we're in a marriage that we're not necessarily being cared about in the way that we had hoped to be. It's also true that in marriage we can have some of our loneliness needs met, but there's still this sense of loneliness that we all carry around inside of us and need to confront whether we're single or whether we're married. Many single people ask themselves the question, why am I single? Is it because there's something wrong with me? And I think you answered that very well. It's not because you were not chosen. You were not chosen because you were, you know, last place, like being chosen for a basketball team and you didn't get chosen because you played poorly. There's something very mysterious about the way in which we choose our relationships, how we choose our partners. Sometimes we choose them also just because it's the person that happened to be in front of us when we felt very lonely and we just stuck to them. A number of people I've worked with in the past have been married or in relationship with somebody since they were in high school. Why did they get connected in high school? Some because that's just who God wanted them to have and that's it. Other people because they just saw someone in front of them. They didn't have the connectedness they needed with other people, perhaps in their home, and so they glommed onto somebody else and kept stuck their whole lives. Now, I'm not necessarily saying that getting married to someone you have known your whole life is a bad thing. Not at all. But what I am saying is that the fact that we're not married doesn't necessarily have to have anything to do with the value of ourselves as people. An issue that we did not confront here today, only to mention, is that a big challenge of singleness is our sexuality. We'll talk about that in the future, and it's a really, really important subject. We went on to talk about how should a person deal with the desire to be married. There's lots of ways to deal with it. There's lots of ways. Very poorly. Why don't you take me over? And how should a person deal with it? Or anywhere you want to go.
In 30 seconds, right?
Yeah.
Or should I finish?
Why don't you go ahead and finish.
Okay. The last question we dealt with today was how should a person deal with the desire to be married? That's a really hard thing to confront, and obviously I'm not dealing with that now. I think I've been married 20 years, and you've been married probably more than that.
25.
Okay, a lot more than that. And so it's easy in one sense for us to say, let's not look at marriage as a thing that will answer our lives. Let's just get on with our lives and work toward doing what God has for us in our lives. It's easier for us as married people to say that in regard to marriage. But, you know, it seems to me, Jack, that there's many, many ways in which we need to get on in life not having what we'd want, even as married people. What we need to do, married or single, is pursue what God has for us in our lives, to pursue understanding and knowing Him. That's what our life needs to be about.
You have been listening to Christianity at Work, a radio ministry of Mackenzie Study Center. If you would like a free copy of this program, or would like to know more about Mackenzie Study Center or Gutenberg College, you may call us at area code 541-485-4801. You can write to us at 1883 University Street, Eugene, Oregon, 97403. And we're also on the Internet. Look for us under Mackenzie Study Center or Gutenberg College. If you didn't have time to write all that down, I'll repeat it again in just a moment. The Mackenzie staff has worked for years studying the Bible, understanding the world we live in, and pursuing what it means to be a Christian. They desire that their ministry may be valuable to others, but they also know that their efforts are in deep need of God's mercy. You can join the Mackenzie staff through classes, seminars, tapes, and papers. The Mackenzie Study Center is a non-profit ministry entirely funded by the generous contributions of people who believe in its goals and have benefited from its ministry. If you would like to make a gift to Mackenzie, it will be entirely tax deductible. Just mail your check to Mackenzie Study Center, 1883 University Street, Eugene, Oregon, 97403. If you would like to call and request a free taped copy of today's program, the telephone number is 541-485-4801. Now, on behalf of Dr. Jack Crabtree, Christine Barber, and the other staff of Mackenzie Study Center, thank you for listening.